Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to number one sports podcast in the Southeast Michigan Detroit region. I think that's right. It's teaming up with C and B regardless. I'm Connor, the C of C and B. As always, with my co-host, the V himself, Vladimir. What's up? Another Wednesday evening as we're recording another episode of the podcast.
I'm doing well. Probably have, I think, 5 or 6 more days of work left for the year. So I'm just kind of counting down those days and pushing along through that. Nothing really noteworthy outside of that, if I think about it. So, how are you?
I'm good. This is like the worst time of the year. Like, it's closed out my files for my clinic today for through school, work in the rest of the week, and then I got exams the week after. So, not the funnest time in the world, but it'll be fun to take some time and talk some ball. It's also like it's starting to hit me, like the short days and like the fact that I'm in the dark or inside the vast majority of the day. It definitely like takes a toll on you now, because like once you get to the 21st, obviously it starts to get slightly better and better throughout, even though it's still cold till April here. Like, at least you get longer days, starting in the new year. It's just
Agreed.
this December time, once you can get past kind of that New Year's period, the days actually don't feel like they're 4 hours long.
Yeah, it is always like you said. I know you're an earlier riser, so waking up and not seeing the sun, and then when you're done with school or done with work, and you still haven't seen the sun because it's now 5 o'clock, and you're like, "Well, this is stupid." I know what you're saying.
Right. But anyways, we've got some ball to talk. Michigan State basketball, as we always do, and a good week and some positive news for them. Rare in the 3 years that this podcast has been a thing,
Yeah,
2.5
this is
years that
true.
this podcast has been a thing. And then we're going to talk about the weekend that was in college football. A fantastic week. And, people might have said, why conference week in the new era? And I think it proved itself. And we'll get into that in the bracket that it's going to be in the new 12-team playoff. And then we'll talk about the Thursday night game for the Lions and the NFL as a whole as we move forward into the latter portions of that season as well. Starting off, Michigan State, a good week of basketball. Two wins since we last spoke, two blowout wins. You go on the road and beat Minnesota by, I believe, 18 points. And then you at home in the matinee on Saturday absolutely pummel Nebraska, 37 point victory. It got up to, I believe, 45 at one point. It was the second largest Big Ten win in the history of the program. To the 2000 team, beat Michigan by 51 points in that national championship season. Let's start with, I didn't watch all of the Minnesota game. I kind of gave up on that one relatively early, but you looked at a team. I don't think that's a very good Minnesota team in general this year. I think they're not a tournament team, probably a bottom three team in the Big Ten this year. So you just kind of went on the road, and it's never easy to win in the Big Ten on the road. And this is going to be another year in the Big Ten where there's going to be 7 to 9 tournament teams. There's going to be 13 or 14 teams that are like can beat anyone on any given day. And then there's kind of the bottom three. But to go on the road and get a win in this conference is not going to be easy. So I don't think it should be taken lightly to go and do that. And in dominant fashion, Trey Holloman kind of leads the way in this one. Hometown kid. I know he's from Minnesota. His mom played there. Great day for him to come out. And in general, the two games here is, I'll say this over the two games, is the three guard starting lineup works. They're probably your three best players right now in Holloman, Fears, and Akers, maybe throwing Jace Richardson there as the fourth, another guard. And also that this team may not have any superstars. And we've kind of said it, even Jaden Akins on a true like elite Michigan State team is probably the second, maybe even third option. But this team has a lot of solid players. They got guys that are willing to play roles. They'll go 10 deep, and they've gotten contributions in spots from everybody. Xavier Booker has shown flashes of it.
Our favorite low-hanging fruit on this
Yeah, our kind of
podcast.
whipping boy. I'll even say Frankie Fiddler has shot the ball slightly better in the last two games, has come in and given good minutes off the bench and played a nice role. Zapala plays his role as kind of this in-and-out big man much better than He can make a layup like Sissoko. He plays hard. He gets a lot of offensive rebounds. Jackson Kohler has actually kind of cooled off offensively in the last week and a half, but he's done a good job staying at least healthy this year and seeing what he can do as a junior now. Carson Cooper, not my favorite player, plays a good role. You could go down the line. You've had 10 guys really, really contribute in their roles, which is not necessarily something Izzo has been able to convince teams of the past post-COVID to do.
Yeah, the other thing, shooting specifically with that game, and I
Oh,
think the
yeah.
Nebraska game, this, I mean, I'm not going to say this is the same team because we're never going to take a three game kind of substance from Maui and say, well, this is what the team is. That seemed like more of a slump always than what they really were when you were listening to the guys talk. It's like, well, here's the 370th team in America, even though there's only 350. Well, how's that possible, coach? I don't know. They're just that bad. You know, those
Right.
slumps of the Maui games are done. I think they shot 50% from deep in the Minnesota game and probably near that in the Nebraska game, maybe even higher because we couldn't seem to miss against Nebraska. So that changed
Yeah.
completely. You talk about that the guys willing to play roles, the guys that, unlike years past, don't have, I don't want to say problems, but don't seem to question Izzo, where, like I said, you know, AJ Hogard at least seemed like would actively go rogue. Other guys would just hide. Third guys would be space cadets. You don't have this. Every single one of these guys is always on, always balls to the wall. The rebounding is like we used to say. I mean, I think I've probably said this verbatim on this podcast where Michigan State teams don't rebound like they used to after, and you look at kind of the last three, four, or five of them. This team rebounds like a Michigan State team used to, and
Yeah.
so much of that just starts with your work ethic. Like, I don't want to sit here and be Torian Prince, but the art of the rebound, half of it's just how like how active you are and how willing you are to sweat. I don't think
Knocks
there's really
out.
a, how tough are you? How willing are you to actually work? There's not some massive secret to can you jump in the air and grab the ball with two hands and come down with it? Because,
Yeah.
you know, everyone knows Yale did that very, very well against Baylor,
Yeah.
but it's not that hard. And so this team, it's great to see it. And they're ranked for the first time in a
Yep.
year. And they're playing definitely the best basketball since the 2020 team when the season got shut down. Now that still doesn't mean they're closer to the 2020 team than they are to the worst teams that we're talking about. I'd still need to see this team play more legitimate opposition because, like you said, Minnesota is not special. I don't think Nebraska is either, and that kind of demon that used to haunt us, Keisei Tomonaga, was not there to drop 35
Yeah.
on our head like it seemed like he did for a decade. So just keep going, keep winning games, and put yourself in a position where you get to compete for a Big Ten title. I don't know. I don't think there's some runaway team.
No, it's not a runaway team, but it's a fun position to be in. And like I said, Minnesota specifically, I think is not going to be a quality opponent. It's going to probably be a tier three or four win when it's all said and done. Nebraska will probably be a zone two, tier two win. That's a quality opponent, but like you can't put too much stock into that game for either team. I think it's just that's just one of those days when something that dramatic happens that it's like Michigan State is not going to play like that most of the time. And I like Nebraska was once it got out of hand, Nebraska was just like missing layups themselves. And like that's a team that went on the road and beat a very good Creighton team. So like they're a respectable team this year. They'll probably be a fringe tournament team when it's all said and done. Like you said, I want to see them play more quality competition. It's a cool spot to be ranked for the first time in a while. And you look at like I kind of went down the schedule when they were blowing out Nebraska, and I was like, what can this team be? And you're looking at probably a team that could very, very realistically be 10, 12, 14, would be 14 and 2 welcoming it, what will probably be a ranked Illinois team in late January. The way the schedule goes, you play two non-conference games to close out the year. And I'm only worried is that like they do have this week off. I mentioned that I turned the game on yesterday, channel on yesterday, hoping to see a game and got my weeks wrong. It's next Tuesday against Oakland. So maybe that week off you're hoping doesn't like take away any momentum. But then you play after the two non-conference games, an Ohio State team that's kind of been up and down, a really bad Washington team, a Northwestern team that is without Boo Booey finally, a Penn State team that while they beat Purdue, kind of got handled by a Rutgers team that has been all over the place this year, to be honest. And then you play that Illinois, then you would play Illinois and then Rutgers and then Minnesota again. So a team that realistically could only have one more loss going into February. And then you go into February, and it's a gauntlet, I won't lie. You go at USC, at UCLA, who's ranked, Oregon, who's a very good team, Indiana is a very good team, Illinois, who will be ranked, Purdue, who's ranked, Michigan, who's ranked, and then a Maryland team that has opened up 2-0 in the Big Ten. So you very well could lose every single game in February. So
You're not wrong.
there's that. But it's a cool spot to be. This team, like you mentioned, the shooting is, I think it's kind of a law of averages in that they were so down bad that this is
Oh,
kind of
yeah.
the correction back to the average, is that I think they are just an average shooting team. They're not bad like we thought at the beginning, and they're not going to be this team we saw the past two games forever. And where I'm at with them right now is when they shoot like they did the last two games, they're going to play with any team in the country. When they don't shoot like that, they're going to be that 8-9 seed team that they've been the past few years. And maybe they'll be somewhere in the middle by the law of averages with when all the games are said and done.
Yeah, don't have much more to add or disagree with or fight there. So,
All right, to college football now. I'll also mention Michigan got a loss last night. Very nice to see. They were up all the way to 14. They had two really nice wins last week. To see them lose, Arkansas's kind of been up and down. It looks like Cal's gonna carry over to Arkansas, and that they're a really talented team that doesn't necessarily translate to them being the best team. So they're kind of a wild card. But still, I like to see Michigan lose, so I thought I'd throw that in there before we transition to football. Football, what a week it was. Conference Saturday did not disappoint, in my opinion. You got the games you wanted. We'll start with the only one that kind of, I guess, from an entertainment value, disappointed. That was Arizona State and Iowa State. Arizona State playing the best football in America, the hottest team in America, you could say. Maybe not the best football, but the hottest team in America, blows out Iowa State, gets themselves a bye. Sam Leavitt leaves Michigan State to have this, I don't know, what do you call this? Like
Cinderella
just
run? I don't know.
Cinderella run. And it's like, it's so uncommon in football because it's like, it's unfortunately, like this is why I don't really think they have much of a chance in the playoffs. Is like football is the one sport where you can't have this Cinderella hottest team goes on a run like you can in, say, hockey or especially March Madness, which we've seen often in the past. But this team is fun. It's cool to see a new team in. It's not a team you saw at the beginning of the year being in. Only a second year with the program, and to just absolutely blow through the competition of this conference. I'll say it was impressive. And maybe you wanted to see a Colorado, maybe you wanted to see somebody a little more entertaining come out of this conference, but I think this is a fun result for the Big 12.
I hate Colorado. I didn't want to see him.
Yeah, I know you hate them, but
No. I actually the only thing I was gonna say is the conference championship Saturday actually started on Friday with the Mountain West and Boise State and
right,
UNLV
sorry.
kind of playing the first pseudo playoff game where Boise State was kind of take care of UNLV. Genty continues to roll. He's only 134 yards away from Barry's record. And then yeah, you go into the kind of the morning appetizer game of on Saturday, which was again a second pseudo playoff game between two programs where winning you're in, losing you're out. It was cool enough. It was just at one point bloody murder. Cam Scadabo is electric. We keep talking about Leavitt, but I think Scadabo's kind of done just as
Yeah,
much, if not more, for that program and
definitely.
just kind of how he leads and how he's able to kind of take over. You watch some of those runs and he's just a bowling ball. So that was insane. I don't know if you saw they showed one of his high school highlights from 2018 in California, and I think he broke like 27 tackles in one video. It's insane. Like everybody missed twice. It
Was
was
he a high recruit?
I don't think so. He, I mean,
Okay.
he came from like Sacramento State, if I'm not mistaken, or somewhere tiny like that. So
As a transfer? Okay.
I don't think he was some blue chip.
In terms of going back to, was Jonte a high recruit? I don't know
I
the answer
don't think
to that
so
either.
either, but I think at least with Genty this past off season, you had major programs who wanted to try and kind of buy him out of Boise State. And he's like,
Okay.
this is where I want to be, this is where I should be. And he's proven that he's correct in that assessment.
I won't be getting him in fantasy, thanks to the commissioner.
No, you did that yourself because you rostered stupid players who scored you points for no
No,
reason.
you told me I had to do it. It's actually your fault now that we
No.
Oh yeah.
I told you that I told you should just flat out cut those players. You never should have rostered them. You should have
I
done what
had to
I did
play
last year.
somebody.
Just roster a bunch of backup running backs, but we could get into that later. Into the probably the worst football wise of the championship games was the SEC game. I thought that was a
The
bad
worst and the
football game.
best.
What?
The worst and the best. Like, yeah, well, it goes back to like the Michigan Ohio State thing is it was sloppy and you saw a backup quarterback,
Yeah, that's
but
what I'm saying.
entertainment value, great game.
Yeah, I mean, ugly. You mentioned what is was
SEC football.
what was his name? What was the backup quarterback's name? Gunnar Stockton, the
Stockton?
guy who
Yeah.
wasn't allowed to throw a forward pass. It was just screen and screen and
Worked.
screen and run. Yeah, it did work. I don't know how Texas loses that game. I think that's a gargantuan just. I think disappointment's an understatement. That like losing to a backup quarterback when, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, I want to say Texas outgained Georgia by about 250 yards in the first half and was only up 6-3.
I'm gonna say this a couple of times though, like they are one of two teams that won by losing.
Yes.
I'll talk about that in a little bit with my good friend team Penn State, but George, or I, do you think this is more Texas's bugaboo is Georgia, or Texas is really not as good as maybe the 1, 2, 3 ranking presumes? Because I'm kind of the second belief.
So I think I could sit there and kind of wrap my head around that. You look back at Texas's SEC schedule, they didn't play Alabama, they didn't play Ole Miss, they didn't play I think it was Tennessee. They basically played Georgia twice, lost both times. In
Yeah.
terms of, like they were kind of the Indiana or Penn State, if you will, where they benefited from the fact that they played nobody and they brought them into a conference title game and they just couldn't get the job done. I think the Quinn Ewers thing is absolutely a storyline. He like I don't know how hurt he is, maybe in the off season as soon as this thing's done and he's like, oh yeah, I actually need to do like seven different surgeries to become 100% again, and maybe that changes kind of the opinion, but he's been horrific
Yeah.
to end this season, and that was kind of a hall of shame performance in one crowning moment or in this 60-minute just coronation where Texas should have said, yeah, watch this. We're a Big 12 school. We're going to walk into the SEC and take your guys' conference from you guys.
Would have been
But they
sick.
couldn't because Ewers can't move. He can't throw. And I remember it was pretty, like, I was sitting here thinking to myself, is in September, especially after that Michigan game, I was sitting here and I was talking, like, this guy looks so poised. He looks this, he looks that. And that's not the same guy I watched. I don't know how hurt he is, but he's been very, very bad. You've got people actively talking about Arch Manning should be playing the playoff game. Forget about the starting quarterback next year. Now, I don't know if I totally agree with going that far, but I think going forward for 2025, Quinn Ewers, if he's still in school, which he's played so poorly, he's not a lock to declare anymore.
No.
He cannot be the starting quarterback of Texas next season.
So, you know what the situation reminds me of? And it's, I think this could arguably work be worse and more controversial. Is it
Jalen
reminds me
Hurts
of
and Tua.
I was going to say Cade McNamara and JJ McCarthy, in that you've got this guy that has been a quality quarterback. And obviously, Cade was never truly, I think, what Pete Quinn Ewers has shown.
Yes.
But the guy keeps winning despite maybe some questionable performances, and I wouldn't even throw Cade in there as far as the like him regressing and being possibly the reason for them losing. Like maybe Quinn Ewers has been the past couple weeks, but it's that situation where you have a high recruit behind him and you're winning and you want to try to make this move, but it could be that Michigan situation where Cade wins you to the playoffs, Quinn wins you to the playoffs, he loses in the playoffs. Okay, now we have an offseason to go back and say Arch is our guy, the younger guy is our guy. And that's kind of the same. And you compared it to Hurts and Tua, that's the same exact thing. That's kind of how I see this going at this point.
Yeah, I like that kind of comparison a lot. And
I'll go ahead,
I was
sorry.
just saying, I think that's kind of your only logical choice. Like I think, like you said, like the Cade McNamara, Quinn Ewers has shown you he can beat the teams he's supposed to beat with a roster that is objectively better than his opponent. But when you get to play against a team where you stack up player for player and blue chip for blue chip and money for money, Quinn Ewers has not shown you he can beat the elite teams.
Right. Outlook, Texas loses but wins. I said that earlier. So they get the 5 seed in all of this. Georgia moves all the way up from a team that wasn't even in 2 weeks ago to the 2 seed in all of this now. I think that's the craziest story. Are the four, three of the four schools with the byes are teams that you would have never saw this coming. And you could argue two, probably even three, wouldn't be even ranked in the top 12 in a normal season. Obviously, Georgia probably would be now with the win, the SEC championship, but going into that. And then Texas is going to play Clemson, a very favorable matchup for them, I think, at home, obviously. It's the largest spread of any of the first round games right now at 11 and a half. It's the only double digit one. And then they would play, I believe, Arizona State, which would be another very, very favorable matchup. The Peach Bowl is in Florida, so that'd be not a home game. So I know there was we were I was talking about it with someone. Would the Fiesta Bowl be thrown in there for Arizona State since that's in
I
Arizona?
think that they've determined the bowls before that. So, like, they have the four bowl games that are going to be
Yeah.
quarterfinal games, and then your semifinal games are the other two. So,
And that's what it looks like
I
looking
think
at
maybe it just so happens that the Fiesta Bowl is designated as a semifinal game this year, and maybe
Yeah.
next year it won't be. But yeah, I think that.
And Boise State got it, not Arizona State.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah,
Have
like you said, they kind of
control.
won by losing. We talk about how coveted that five spot is and was with Notre Dame, and kind of how it's set up for them to always do great. And maybe this isn't the kind of the Notre Dame example perfectly because they're not here, but you get to play the worst team in the playoff at home, and you get to follow it up with then the second worst conference champion, which will more often than not be the greatest team. And we
Right.
kind of saw that. Like Arizona State was outside of the playoff. I think they were ranked 16th last week, and they're just like, all right, you've been playing some good football. We'll just have you jump some teams, go crazy. You're going to be in anyway because of how the rest of the kind of the conference title games ended up. So not much to change there.
And even Georgia, like they are big winners from winning, though. Like these two teams, like the results were great for both of them. Is they'll play Indiana, the winner of it, they'll get a bye. By having two losses, and B, they'll play the winner of Notre Dame and Indiana, which is also another relatively favorable matchup. I think it's fair. I think it's not
Oh,
like.
I think it's massively favorable. You're the two seed, and you get to avoid the other three betting favorites. I think I think the biggest
Yeah.
part where we'll get to Oregon specifically once we start talking about the Big Ten, but how
Yeah.
you're the one seed, perfect regular season, win your conference title game and they reward
They
you
got the
with a
worst.
path of
Yeah.
second most bet on team. Third most bet on team, yourself, and then Georgia is your path to try and win a title. And Dan Lanning, and we'll get into Oregon specifically. I think he took it very well, but I think.
Let's get into that game right now because that's kind of the next one.
Yes.
Oregon 45, Penn State 37. Oregon's offense is great. They've kind of done this all year. Penn State, known for their defense, had zero answers all night.
Oh, yeah.
Offense, they could gain yards at will, and they've kind of done this against everybody except Wisconsin is really the only team I saw them have any kind of struggles with. They did this against Ohio State. They had their way moving the ball when they wanted to, and that like That's why they're the betting favorite. That's why they're the best team in the country, is when they need those yards, they have the weapons, they have the quarterback offensively to get it done. On the other end, for Penn State, as a team that, or person that roots for them, I wasn't displeased by their performance. I thought the defense kind of got exposed a little bit. I'm not sure there is another offense that can do that, and you wouldn't have to see them until the national championship. So I'm not even going to get like, why even worry about it at that point? What I was somewhat impressed, and this is somewhat loser talk, is Penn State's not necessarily known for staying in those types of games and being able to score with teams. And they were, up until a Drew Aller interception on the last drive of the game on some boo-boo play calling by the offensive coordinator. His name's escaping me. He's new this year. The only thing that worries me about Penn State moving forward is we talked about Texas being winners by losing. Penn State is the ultimate winner
Oh
by losing. They're going to play what?
yeah.
So
SMU and
they're going
then
to play
Tulane.
SMU and then Boise State, which are two games where they'll be more than touchdown. I think they're an 8-point favorite against SMU. They'll be more than a touchdown favorite against Boise State as well.
Can I give you another winner? You get to play a team that might not have a quarterback in the semis.
Yeah.
Carson Beck might be dead.
In Georgia, exactly. So, I mean, you can't get mad with that. I just like, and it kind of happened again with some of the stuff James Franklin did in that game, is that like it just makes you worry that the James Franklin stereotype, you can't win the big one, is going to come to fruition. And I know I say that like Penn State's expectation now is just to get in this 12-team format. That's where they are as a program. With this schedule and this team and the way they've looked, as inconsistent as they have been, it would be a failure of a season to not at least beat SMU.
Could you imagine big game James in the national championship?
That's why, like, I put in a future today for Penn State at +600, fourth best odds.
Would
And I
that
was
look?
like, the schedule was too good to not take +600.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, those are
Look at
great odds.
SMU at home, and we'll talk about the ACC game coming up after this, but Boise State is, they keep winning and it's fun and Ashton Jeanty, but they're not a good football team. And then if Carson Beck really is done and this Gunnar Stockton guy's the quarterback, Georgia doesn't let him throw.
Yeah.
Like, granted, that might have been an impromptu thing of, oh, well, we planned for Carson Beck to be our quarterback, so maybe things change after a month of knowing Carson Beck won't be playing games, but still, like, if that's your path to a national championship in the expanded playoff where everyone gets a chance, that's awesome. You take that any day of the week, you run to the bank with it. Specifically about that game. I think you mentioned I was very impressed with Penn State's offense. That is not a team you would expect to be able to go blow for blow with an offense like Oregon. Tyler Warren is absolutely
Yeah.
electric. He becomes the second college tight end this century to hit 1,000 yards in a season, something Brock Bowers, even the mighty Brock Bowers, could never do. So that's a fun little stat for you there. I forget who the first guy was, but second college tight end of the century to get to 1,000 yards receiving. That's cool. I think the running back Singleton, when he's kind of given just a little bit of space, can make plays. Ka'Tron Allen can come in, change pace.
Yep.
And Drew Aller quietly is just like stuck around and kind of maybe he's benefited from other quarterbacks falling flat on their face, but he's like, I'm like quietly hearing his name get thrown around of like, is this kid like an NFL prospect? Is this a first round draft pick? Just given how you watch everyone else just again fall flat on their face. We talk about Carson Beck being Mr. Walking Turnover the second half of the season. We talk about Quinn Ewers, whether he's hurt or not, playing poorly. And then after that, it's Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward.
I'm not like I don't know what the quarterback class for next year looks like, but I would need to see him do this kind of end of the year stretch next year for me to really
Sure.
take that.
Again, I'm just throwing that out there. And to be honest, I don't think the quarterback class is great. I think it's like Arch if he chooses to come out, but that might only be one season of being a starting quarterback for Arch. So do you really want to send him into the NFL after that?
Yeah. And then whoever emerges essentially as a star.
Yeah. We've got, I mean, maybe Aiden Childs will be in that class. Maybe he'll put it
Stop.
together.
Stop.
And
Stop.
maybe we'll win seven games.
Stop. The only thing that worries me about Penn State with SMU in a couple weeks, as my sister sent me a text at 1 o'clock in the morning last night that she saw Tyler Warren at the bar. So we need to keep him on at the football facility and not at the bar at 1 a.m.
No. Let him go on his Johnny Manziel arc. The
No.
harder we party, the better we play. Yeah, the last thing I want to say about the Big Ten, though, with Oregon specifically, is they got absolutely hosed with that draw. And Dan Lanning comes out and says, "Look, man, it's not supposed to be easy to win a national championship. We'll beat them all. Just give them to us." And I kind of love that mentality. There are other coaches. We're not going to name any of them. There are other coaches who would probably complain and say, "Well, we earned X, Y, and Z. Why don't we get to do X, Y, and Z?" And so I was glad to hear that. And we'll watch. I think Oregon will be set up to kind of play the most intriguing kind of quarterfinal game should the correct team win that first round game.
Yeah, and like I think we talked about how there's no team that we trust as a number one seed. I think the ways Oregon's has played down the stretch has made me believe that like no matter Ohio State wins this game against Tennessee, they're 7-point favorites right now. I still like have all the faith in the world Oregon beats them again.
Sure. I guess, and now that we kind of mention it, I really, really hope OSU gets the ball first and goes three and out. I think that the Boo Birds would be so loud because the last time those fans saw their team, it
Oof.
was the ultimate throw up on yourself and fight the rival to the point where we've got state representatives introducing bills trying to make it a felony to plant flags.
Yeah.
I assume you saw that.
I did. I just saw that. Yeah.
That's hilarious that
Yeah.
the state of Ohio has fallen that far that we're talking about making it a felony to plant a flag at the horseshoe, or I guess any stadium. I don't think this was specifically called out the shoe, but just hilarious.
And it's such a good point. I had not thought about that. It is the most interesting home game, I think.
Oh yeah.
Obviously, Notre Dame, Indiana is going to be interesting because they're
In-state rivals or
in
rivals
state.
with some
Yeah,
quotation
I'm not
marks
going to
on
say rivals, but in the same state. But like you said, with Ryan Day on the hot seat, not expecting, if you were Ohio State coming into this year, you didn't expect to be playing in a home playoff game. I don't care. You expected to be playing in a neutral site game in a week and a half after that against an SEC team that can score when you haven't exactly proven that you could score. In Tennessee, I'm going to say this too, isn't that far from Ohio State to where an SEC fan base is going to come into your house and have some kind of rain over that horseshoe. I know they'll do everything they can to not let that happen, but this is an SEC program.
I could see that, yeah. So I'm curious that'll definitely be the most intriguing game, and we'll probably preview these next week. I forget, I think the exact dates are next Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that next week. But
Night game too. It's a shame. I'm gonna harp on it too. It's a dang darn shame that Penn State is not allowed a white out.
I thought they said they are doing
They
the
are doing it, but they're
it's
the
not
noon
the
game.
whiteout.
It's not a night game. It's a noon game.
So it won't
So
be the same. Yeah, you guys, the networks really hate you.
yeah, well, it's the age-old Fox Noon. Is like whenever they've wanted to do the whiteout for a game, they've been Ohio State was at noon. I think it was Illinois. No, that was the actual whiteout. So, yeah, and these games are on TNT. That's crazy. I'm just looking at that right now.
Yes. I do think that's odd considering ESPN owns the playoff. I'm a
Right.
little shocked at how Turner got involved in this, but everyone gets a turn to stream a game. I'm shocked we don't have it something on Amazon yet.
Yeah,
But
aren't
maybe
we getting a
that's
Netflix NFL game for the playoffs
Christmas.
this year?
Well,
Oh,
for
Christmas.
Christmas, I don't know about the playoffs, but that wouldn't shock me. But last game of the night, ACC, Clemson goes up two scores early and I know we were watching these together and we kind of sat there joking. We're like, well, if SMU gets blown out, they're going to put Alabama in.
Yeah, it
And
felt like that for a while.
I mean, even though SMU just regularly lost, I thought they were going to put Alabama in because money talks and they ended up doing the right thing. So that was nice by keeping them out. And I'll quickly talk about that kind of debate afterwards. But this was kind of a very entertaining game, very close game. And Clemson wins it with a just absolute onions, ice cold kick from like 55 yards, which in college is very, very hard outdoors. And good for them. Dabo Swinney, Mr. You Gotta Buy the Stock Now, finds his way back into the playoff in a game where it's funny because even after they won that game, they're still viewed as the 16th best team. They just got the 12 seed because they have to get put in. So that I think not that like I mean, you could have ranked them at zero. They still would have been in based on the rules or the format. But I thought that was funny where the committee ranked them, and just good for Clemson, I guess. They get to sit there. They'll go down to Texas in the Battle of the Orange and see what they can do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a program that has the talent to maybe put up a fight in that game, but I just don't think they're consistent enough to where there's a reason why this is the only double digit spread to
Agreed.
start the
Agreed.
playoff.
With the kind of, I'll quickly just talk about the decision, the Bama SMU. I actually don't understand how they even had an argument. I listened to a little bit of the selection show, and granted, all those guys are biased because Nick Saban is Nick Saban, and ESPN is the water carrier for the SEC, and then some of those other guys that you had out there are all kind of connected to Alabama. But they're sitting there and they're like, "Oh, well, strength of schedule needs to matter, and we're never gonna schedule a non-conference Power Four game again." It's like, dude, first of all, you never have done this, so it's not like you're depriving the sport of anything. Playing Wisconsin on the road is the first time they've played a non-conference Power Four game on the road since before Saban. So congrats to yourselves. No one's gonna miss you not playing those whack schools anymore.
They
Second of
also
all,
waxed Wisconsin this year. So, like,
yeah, no. Well, that's what I was gonna say is you didn't get knocked out because you didn't schedule the 85 Bears followed by the NFC Pro Bowl team followed by whoever else, the Monstars from Space Jam. You got knocked out because you lost to 2 6-6 schools, and one of them blew you off the field. And it's like, and I understand that like the selection show was 4 hours long, so like you have to create word fluff, and I don't even know if they truly believe what they were saying, but it's a pretty simple answer. You lose to multiple 6-6 schools in the same year, you're done. Hell, you look at me. You lose to one of those schools, you should be done. You know my thought process on college football teams, but how do you lose to both of those and expect to still try and like make an argument? Like you're stupid. Oh, but we beat South Carolina. Okay, what else?
That was my next thing is like, who do they really beat this year besides Georgia?
Georgia, that was it. South Carolina. Like that.
So.
So that's and the other thing is SMU should not get punished for being good enough to play that extra game. Like that would have been insane, where it's like 11-1 SMU was ranked number 8. If they would have knocked him out, I think next year you would have seen teams on the fringe just say, "Yeah, we don't want to play. We'll forfeit this one. It's not worth it."
That is a good save face for those games actually mattering. A, that you had Clemson in that dramatic fashion earn a way into the playoff through that game specifically, and then you, like you said, didn't have the opposite where SMU losing knocked them out. It made these games still like it was good savior for their relevance, I should say.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing, or actually, there's two things I have left for college, but the last thing I'll say with the playoffs specifically, I'm kind of happy that it seems like this format is universally hated by every network, every analyst, and every talking point. And I would fully expect this offseason some Brett McMurphy news report comes out on a Tuesday morning that says, "Oh yeah, no more bye weeks automatic for the champions." Like you can still get in if you're a team, because we do still have to like keep that importance, but we can't sit here and give away bye weeks to the 16th best team in America or the 12th best team in America in ASU's case.
So I think that's actually how it's got to go, right?
Oh,
Like,
absolutely.
but the
Or
problem is
you
can't
just
be,
expand to 16.
I was going to say that would require you to do that because there's not 12 wouldn't work out 1
Yeah,
through
no.
12.
Cannot give away bye weeks based on winning a conference when conferences are not equal. Now, let's say this 12-team format came into play 5 years ago when there was still somewhat balanced conferences. Yes, you still knew that the SEC and the Big Ten were largely better, but at least the Big 12 still had flagship programs. At least the Pac-12 still had flagship programs. And for the ACC side, at least Clemson wasn't washed back then, but I think you could have maybe gotten away with it then, but not anymore. Giving away conference championships when there's really a power two just doesn't work.
Yeah, agreed.
And last thing I was going to say about college football, Bill Belichick.
Yeah, what is, I kind of like skimmed over that. What is, why? Like, that's all I can think about. And like, if I'm North Carolina, like, I just fired slash he retired the old, like, give it one more
Mayor
chance at the
Mac
kicking
Brown.
it. Yeah, like kicking the can down the road, Matt, with Mac Brown. Why do it again with someone that's like never even done it in college football? Like you just did it. You just saw it not work out.
I genuinely have no idea. Part of me wants to sit here and say, like, this only can happen at North Carolina because North Carolina is a school that is not a football school. They're not premier. They don't have some kind of brand or some kind of tradition established. So when Bill Belichick comes in and throws you his insane list of demands, you actually think about it, kind of like Dion at Colorado, where he's allowed to do
Yeah.
whatever he wants and no one's going to tell him no because he's made them relevant.
I'll say this, it's a big enough like market fan base. Like I know there's no tradition, but like fan base, like
Yeah,
NIL, like a lot
UNC
of
is a big school.
like that, like I think you could build, like it is possible to build some kind of thing there, but like you said, like I just like why would he even want to do it?
I don't. Maybe he's afraid that the NFL has moved on from him and he doesn't want to get embarrassed by the fact that he'll have a second coaching cycle where nobody hires him. Maybe he's that prideful. I don't know. I think maybe you can, if you want to try and look at the positives, maybe you can make the argument that kids are going to say, this is Bill Belichick. He knows the NFL. He can put me in a better position to be ready for the NFL than your average mom and pop Jonathan Smith might.
Which
Maybe
is
that.
what college football is all about now.
So maybe that'll kind of be his selling point is he'll say, look, I know what to do. I know how to do it. And we're just going to run an NFL junior level program where I'm going to teach you NFL concepts. I'm going to teach you NFL defenses. And whether it works, wins or losses on the field, maybe he doesn't even care.
So here's something spooky, is I just Wikipedia'd Bill Belichick because I wanted to see when the last time he coached college was.
Never.
And this is what hits the first sentence of his Wikipedia says. William Stephen Belichick, born April 16, 1952, is an American football coach who is the head football coach at the University of North Carolina.
Yeah.
So wait, so he took the actual job?
Yeah.
Oh,
Oh, it's
I thought he
official.
was just considering it.
No, it's official.
Oh, whoa. Well, now I'm even more invested in this.
Yeah. It's awesome.
So and then, yeah, the answer is he has never coached college football.
This is awesome. I think it'll be super interesting. Yeah, like you're not gonna sit here and expect this team to come in and start just blowing the doors off teams, but I think maybe that can be the role or the program he carves out for himself is look at me, I'll tell you how to get to the next level, how to succeed, and I'll just become a pipeline for NFL players. But we'll see if that actually happens. Obviously, future NFL players like to have money attached to their allegiances. When you look at the SEC and Big Ten schools that kind of quote unquote run the sport, all those guys are seven-figure players that are on their way to the league. So I don't know if North Carolina can compete financially, but it'll be interesting to see.
I think this is like a, he's gonna try and see if he can do it in like a this little like 3 or 4 year stint when you can kind of build programs this fast in this era and just say he did it and then either retire or go back to the NFL because he'll be 75 years old at that point.
Yeah, I don't see him going back to the NFL at this point just because if like again, I assume he takes this job because he knows deep down that maybe an
He's
NFL
got it.
team isn't giving him a job. And so I don't know what going back or going back, but what going to college will show the NFL for you. So
But it's so funny because like he's kind of been ex like taken out of the NFL, excommunicated from that circle in the NFL because he was like, it's like the you can't treat players like that way doesn't work anymore type thing is like, isn't that taken to the extreme at the college level? Like,
well, absolutely.
so it just
It makes no sense. This is
I don't
awesome.
know. Yeah, it'll be fun at the very least. So and
He's gonna get up there and he's like, we're gonna treat every week like it's just individual. Hey, Bill, where are you going this week? South Carolina. Big week.
I literally think it's just
Saturday.
like the Wild West of like true free agency, and that like he's gonna do his thing X's and O's wise that he likes to do, and really not give a fuck who's there, because it's going to be different guys week to week and year to year. And like he's not even going to try to recruit. It's just going to be, I'm going to build the team this year based off guys that I like, because that's kind of what he did through the draft in New England anyways. And that, like, there's just going to be no like actual program building.
Yeah, I'm so curious to watch this next season. They're gonna be box office, but I think that's enough for me on the college, unless you have something else.
No, I quick transition because we like to talk about money with Bill Belichick. Baseball news: Juan Soto signs the largest contract in the history of baseball, 15 years, $765 million. The Yankees or the Mets outbid the Yankees. Even Stephen Cohen says he didn't really think it was going to happen until it happened. And there's reports that there's two things that are the reason where the difference is. One, the Yankees would not give him his own family suite, and the Mets did. And then two, he had a run-in with a Yankee security guard in August, right before the playoffs. And the security guard, like in the hallway, wouldn't let a family member through to see him during warm-ups. And kind of like Mark Wahlberg and the other guys type thing, only he didn't shoot Derek Jeter. But it rubbed him such the wrong way that he couldn't overlook the sweet thing too. And their offer was for $5 million less. So the Yankees or the Mets win the bidding war. Here's where I'm at as somebody that does like roots for the Yankees. I would have loved to have Soto. He's a great player. He's a generational talent. This is obscene and just immature decision on how much money this is over how much time, even in
Yeah.
a sport like baseball.
What is he, 26, I
He's
think?
26, he'll be 41 at the end of this contract.
So you think if you're lucky, you get 10 years of the best of Soto in the last 5 years, you're just paying for the back end of the 10?
That's if you're lucky. You're
Yeah, like
really
I said, if
only
you're lucky.
like he, yeah, like he's still only 26, and that's why it's his contract has been so interesting, because 26 to come up from this deal, and he's already gotten the big deal from the Padres too. It was only over a much shorter amount of time, obviously, but a lot of baseball players don't come of, even at 26 is young to kind of come of age for your big contract in the baseball world. And that's what made this situation so unique. But even then, I like the guy's been playing since he was 19 years old. He had like certain, like it should be accounted for the fact that he started younger at the professional level as well. Like, and I know guys play baseball at 19 years old. So it's like, yeah, everybody played baseball at 19, but they didn't play 162 games and were in the World Series. With the Nationals, which all time fumbled a bag from them, as they had Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, and Juan Soto all below the age of 28 and couldn't sign any of them long term. And all signed massive deals elsewhere, two of them on the same team. But I he's a great player. Like I said, generational talent. We would have loved to have him. I'm not one of those Yankee fans that is just going to be like, well, like I see highlights on Twitter of like how he wasn't good defensively, and now we have to see a video of every one of his errors. Like, I'm not trying to rational, and like, I've seen a lot of Yankees fans be like, well, this allows us to just like go fill more holes financially. He's like, yeah, but like, there's no salary cap. So you could have filled as many holes with as much money as the Steinbrenners really wanted to do that. So that really doesn't make sense to me either. I just like, and the Yankees were going to give it out, so I can't be too critical of it. It's just like, it doesn't make true sense to me. I know the Mets were a playoff team this year, but they're not exactly poised with young talent to stay there long term, nor were they a true contender. They were kind of a surprise wild card team this year. So I don't know. Like Stephen Cohen making moves, his previous big time contracts besides Lindor have not really worked out, but between the money that he signed, I believe he spent over $1 billion between Pete Alonso and Juan Soto this summer or this offseason. So,
Hey, man wants to win.
yeah, we'll see if it works out. Because as much as the Yankees or the Mets are a big market team, they've been somewhat and they've been big spenders and big market, and Cohen's era of ownership. They've been somewhat of a cheap poverty franchise for a lot of their history, so I hope it works out for them.
How did you
Moving to
know?
the NFL, we'll start with Thursday night. Our hometown squad, big character win, gets it done at home, division game against the Packers with no defensive players alive. And I think we talked about this as impressive as it was, the Lions put up another, big number on the scoreboard offensively, and 31 points does look like a lot for the defenses. What I take away of this is this was a good defensive performance, and Jordan Love kind of had his way at times in the second half in this one, but you came out 17-7 at the half, and their defense was able to stick it to them for the half. And that was enough with who you have and who you're playing right now to really, for stretches of this game, shut down a good offense. And I think that's the takeaway moving forward, is that they're going to be okay. Obviously, all anyone can talk about is how the rest of the season schedule this season is hard. They have a big test against Buffalo. It's going to be the ultimate test for that defense. And I'm at the point now, and it's such a shame. And what bothers me so much about this Lions season in general, I know this is kind of taking away from the actual game, is you've played so well. You've won in so many different ways this year, and you haven't earned yourself any cushion because of the way the Eagles and the Vikings have played this year in your
Well, there's
division.
some cushion. If the Lions end the season 3-1, and it doesn't even matter which 3-1 it is anymore, from what I saw, they're the one seed and they win the division. But
That's not a cushion in
no, I
my
know.
head.
I say that in a I say that in a kind of a joking matter, in a satirical one, where yeah, you want to pretend like you've won something. There's your win is if you finish 15-2, you'll be the one seed. And the fact that like you're not guaranteed the one seed at 15-2 is hilarious, or it's just. Is what it is. I mean, with the game specifically, obviously all things are going to lead to us talking about the fourth down decision, but there obviously is some notable things. The rest of the game you mentioned, the first half defense is great, 17-7, have a turnover forced on Christian on the Christian Watson fumble. And then the second half was just whack where, yeah, we gave up 31 points, but 14 of those were just offensive miscues where what are you doing going for it on your own 30? That's insanity. Second of all, that Jared Goff interception where they give the ball to the Packers at the 15, you gave away 14 points on just short drives. So like I'm not gonna blame the defense for that. I don't care if the force says 31 points. 14 of those they couldn't do anything about because they were given the ball at the end. And you have them holding Green Bay to a field goal at the end only to tie instead of them taking the lead, which completely changed how we got to operate on that last drive. And so I was incredibly proud of what was left of the defense. But let's actually talk about that kind of spectacular decision.
And the man.
That's I think we talked about it. I think we kind of we're both in agreement where that's just kind of a irrational decision
I
where
never want to see that in a playoff game ever.
that's yeah that was incredible. I mean, look, I understand you trust your offense. I understand you think you can get a yard and a half at any given point, but you also have to weigh the risk rewards where you're not making your field goal any easier by gaining 3 yards on fourth down, and you're just adding a play where somebody can blow up your running back or your quarterback can trip on the offensive lineman and go down to a knee and almost kind
Yeah, I
of
was going to say, how about the fact that the pro rules favor them?
the what?
I said, how about the fact that they're lucky they're playing pro rules, because that
Oh,
play
not
would have
college,
been done
yeah.
in the NFL.
True. True.
Or, sorry, college.
Yeah. So like that to me, I don't understand like the oh, because if you get it, like yeah, you're not sending your defense back out there. But if you don't get it, you're sending the Packers out there and saying, "Hey man, go get 25 yards and you get to win the game." Instead of, "Hey man, you need to get 40 yards just to tie." Like the Packers with no timeouts in 40 seconds, they're not winning the game. They're not. They're not going down the field and scoring a touchdown. And if they do, then you can blame the defense. But you deserve to lose if that happens. So I disagreed with the decision, but it works out. They win another game and they get to have that kind of pseudo bye week where they get 10 days as opposed to 7 to play the Bills. Josh Allen is electric. We'll talk a little bit about that game against the Rams, 'cause that's one of the few games I actually watched outside of the Lions, but just look, everything's in front of this team. 3-1 over your next four games, and you have yourself the one seed. So let's go get it done.
Yeah. I don't have much to add on the Lions front. It's just, like you said, I don't want to see that ever again. You did a good job explaining it. Let's get into the other games.
All right.
I didn't watch a ton, so I'll kind of go off of what I do know happened. What the game really, like you mentioned, that we need to talk about: Rams 44, Bills 42. Not only do the Rams kind of save their season in that NFC West is just kind of all over the place still, but you do that. Josh Allen, I think, locks up his MVP performance despite the loss. They can score on anybody, and it's mostly him doing it. And yeah, I like they're right there. And we've talked about it when they played the Chiefs a couple weeks ago, and that like you thought this was going to be a down year for the Bills, and they come back. And I know we're talking about this like in a loss, but they're for real. They're probably the best team in the AFC, in my opinion,
I
despite the loss.
agree. Yeah, six touchdowns yourself, zero turnovers. He's protected the ball unlike any Josh Allen version we've ever seen before.
Yep.
He is the MVP. I would be shocked if there's even someone close to him at this point via betting odds, but good for him. In terms of the other games, I think maybe this is a combination of the Lions didn't play on Sunday and there was just
No, it was
way
a
too.
stinker.
It was a plethora of shit games, especially the 1 o'clock. That 1 o'clock window is one of the worst NFL windows I've ever seen. You had Saints Giants,
14-11.
Browns Steelers, Falcons Vikings was the only game where you had two teams that were actually still alive. And that game turned out to be a dud because the Falcons corners were blind. Like they weren't even covering players. Then you
Yeah.
go Raiders Buccaneers, Panthers Eagles,
Stinker. Yeah.
Jags Titans.
God, don't even that was that the NFL?
Yeah, and then I think Miami and the Jets were also a 1 o'clock game. That's not a great game. The Jets haven't won a football game in a month. And if I mean, if we want to sit here and kind of we talked about beating the dead horse with Xavier Booker earlier, if you want to beat a dead horse, what Aaron Rodgers has done to this Jets team is not just torpedo this season for him, he's torpedoed their future because you've got reports that Garrett Wilson is requested a trade. This superstar defense of theirs that they've had the last 2, 3 years with Robert Saleh, not so superstar anymore. You've got Sauce Gardner, who's taken a step back. Quinnen Williams, who's kind of looks like he's taken a step back. And to be fair, some of this might just be quit factor where we're
Right.
3-9. What do we care if we go to 3-10? So maybe there's some explanation or some kind of justification and why the defense doesn't do anything anymore, but you've torpedoed your once great defense where we always spent year after year saying, well, as long as you upgrade Zach Wilson, this is a dangerous team. Well, is it? Because what are we doing there? And again, if Garrett Wilson really gets traded or if he's that pissed off, uh-oh, because that's supposed to be your future wide receiver one that you kind of can build an offense around. It's not Devontae Adams as much as people want to say. Or maybe not say as much as Aaron Rodgers wants to say. Breece Hall starting to deal with injuries, kind of hitting the classic running back thing. I think he might end up being a Saquon Barkley type guy where elite kind of level talent and can put together stretches and maybe even a full season here or there, but is hampered by injuries and more importantly, plays for a shit team that's going to waste his career. So I don't see Breece Hall being willing to stay in that situation for long, given how short running back careers are. So just pathetic from the Jets, pathetic 1 o'clock window. If you want to talk for the later one, I watched a little bit of Seahawks Cardinals just because I have to continue my Marvin Harrison Jr. dynasty fan watch, and the Kyler Murray late season collapse is upon us. He
Yeah.
throws two interceptions in a game that they had to win, where they could have come back and just tied Seattle for the division lead, and you don't.
Just
Then
kind of
you.
come back to earth.
Yeah, and then you have the Bears 49ers, which that wasn't a great game either. I don't know if you saw this, but at halftime of that Bears 49ers game, the Bears had more punts than offensive yards. They had 5 punts in the first half and only 4 offensive yards.
What like Caleb Blitt, the stat line is crazy. 17 for 23, 134 yards, 2 touchdowns. Like that's like they didn't even give it to him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what happened in that first half, but they could, like, I
They
think the
only
first.
ran 42 play 45 plays.
Yeah,
That's not that many.
I think the 49ers could have just like made it like 50-0 in the first half. They didn't care. And then the last game that we have to talk about, just because they continue to
Yoink.
do it, is the Black Magic Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, I like Brittany Mahomes posted something on Instagram, like her Instagram post for the game was like, if you're not laughing at this point, you're not having fun. And that's literally what this is for the Chiefs. Like, it's unbelievable that they could do this weekend. It's like, if I'm a Chiefs fan, and I know I hate saying this thing about the Chiefs because they're just going to end up there like they always do, but you
This is
almost
not
like,
a good team.
yeah, it's not a good team, but like, you also like, you don't want like just as like a superstitious luck thing. Like, don't, you're wasting all of these like lucky performances in the regular season. Like, you're gonna run out of them luck wise come playoff.
It's I don't understand it. And I'll be fair, at least this game they won, like they got into field goal range, kind of like what happened to the other teams, where Denver's in field goal range to beat them, and then they block it on a some low percentage thing, and then the Raiders are possibly in field goal range and a low percentage errant snap occurs. At least I'll be fair to the Chiefs this week. They did what they needed to do. They themselves got into the high percentage field goal make, and we win, and we walk and we go home happy type things. In classic Chiefs fashion, my guy pulls the damn thing and hits the upright. And instead of it bouncing right back how it always does when you hear a doink, the thing still goes in. It was insane. Like, it's just, that's how the Chiefs win. It's stupid. They're vulnerable. They're not a great team. And I hope to God we get to play them in the Super Bowl, because I think we could kill them.
I unfortunately like don't think it's gonna. I think I've gotta. I don't want to say it because it's like that point in the year where you say it every year about the Chiefs, but I don't think it's their year. I'm sorry.
I hope so. But
I'm gonna we're like timestamp this for like the second week of February.
yeah, and they're gonna sit there and just laugh at us after they beat us, and we do our own thing, where Dan Campbell on 4th and 40 in the first quarter says, "Yeah, let's try going for it." But that's all I have for the NFL. Like I said, I didn't watch as much of the actual games. There was just, again, it was a plethora of shit. And we actually had one of our soccer games that was earlier than usual, so I couldn't really totally watch the afternoon games or the Sunday night game. I only caught the end. So that's it for me. If you have anything else NFL-wise or anything you want to mention.
No, I think we covered everything. We even sprinkled in a little December baseball for the people.
Yeah.
So we covered all stops.
All right.
NHL update, the Red Wings. They won yesterday, but, or, t yeah, yes, t Monday night. They still suck. Sorry.
Nice. Yeah, I will, in honor of having a basketball team with a pulse and having a basketball team that's fun, I will let us out with a go green.
Yeah, go white.